Afternoon, Joe.
Afternoon, Paddy. How are you?
Very well, thank you, mate. Good. Very well. Great. Nice to be here at HQ Contenders.
Yeah, you're actually in our studio today, which is great. It's lovely to see you in the city and not kind of see you across the interwebs.
Yeah, it's nice to be in the city sometimes. No, it is good. It's good to be here.
But how do you find it? How do you find like the transition between, because obviously where you're living now is kind of, it's not remote, but it's remote. I'm just curious about how you kind of find that transition between kind of, you know, hearing Laura Keats to hearing lorries and trucks and trams and everything else.
Yeah, I think what it does, I've noticed it more coming in, it makes me acutely aware to lots of different stuff that I wouldn't normally be. Like when I lived in the city or urban environments, I get super desensitized to things and I pick up on a lot more when I'm come in fresh and looking at things, and depending on what I'm looking for is sort of what it reveals. You definitely notice trends a lot heavier, like a lot quicker. Pick up on body language really quick on humans and things like that. And then you get a sense of where the city's at, I suppose, because you're coming in and you're sort of looking for that. Well, yeah. I am. So I enjoy it for that. I was in last weekend and it was hilarious. I was catching up with my brother, and I'm from Melbourne, in case anyone cares out there. And it was just hilarious going down to the pub. My brother and I were meant to catch up for just a quick meal, and there was, it felt like I was 21 again. There was that many mates.
Straight back into
it. It was hilarious. So I feel blessed that I can experience that and then duck out to hear koala poo on the ground as I go for a walk.
Literally.
Yeah, I figured out koala poo looks a lot like possum poo because I heard it dropping when I was taking the dogs for a walk. But that's the place that I go and get a lot of I process through a lot of things and do some of my finest work out.
It's true. You, Paddy and the Koalas. Yeah. Could be a band or a nice nature walk.
Yeah, it should be a band. Yeah, but how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. A little bit tired this week. I was saying kind of off air, like you kind of got a case of the, I don't know, I think I've just been after it, you know, kind of, I think that's a genuine thing. Like I've just been not burning candles at both ends, but probably certainly lighting lots of stuff on fire and just trying to get through many things. And, you know, kind of look back, it's like I haven't taken a break at all this summer. I've just been after it really since, you know, kind of Jan 2nd. So I think I've just been back and kind of at it at full whack. I had a breakfast with one of the investors in our business here this morning. And, you know, I was just like, wow, I'm a little bit shattered, a little bit tired and looking it. So yeah, there's a bit of that. So that's kind of, you know, I think it's normal. Looking forward to the long weekend here. Just trying to get a day of not doing very much. But I think it's just a good eye opener that, you know, I've got to spend a bit more time, I think, just trying to center myself as I work through this. I've done a lot of the hard grafting, I think, through summer, but now as it's turning to kind of autumn here, I've just got to cool my jets a little bit and try to slow it down. I think that's what I was thinking about. Driving across the city myself this morning, no koalas, just thinking that I've just got to take it down a beat.
I don't reckon you're alone in that. I feel like a lot of people are feeling that. It's good you can speak to that because it's a hard one to speak and say that you're tired.
Yeah. And like everyone, you know, I think, I mean, maybe you find this, maybe you don't. I mean, we can chat about this, but I find people kind of go, oh, just busy. You know, like, how you doing? Oh, busy, mate. I'm like, yeah, that's just a state of action or motion. It's not actually how you're feeling about your busyness. Because sometimes I'm really busy and I'm amped and I'm pumped and I'm just like, you know, like I just don't notice that I'm, you know, executing or doing stuff at that particular level. But it tends to follow that if you do that over a period of time, I reckon I can do that for probably about like 4 weeks until I end up in kind of this state I'm at now, where I've kind of been doing it for 8 weeks, and that's definitely way too long.
I've been reading a book that's changed my view. I think we spoke about Messi saying to a younger player, walk more in a game. And I thought that was, I don't know if we said it on air or off air, but I thought that was revolutionary to hear someone like Messi say that to a young player to assess things. And ever since hearing that, I've been trying to incorporate it in my life. But lately, I've been running as fast as I can because it's, I don't know, I feel like it's programmed into me that you have, the faster you move, the harder you work. Like when things feel a bit maybe out of control or a bit up in the air, that you've, to help yourself sleep at night, you've got to know that you've worked as hard as you possibly can.
Yeah, like worked yourself to exhaustion type of vibe.
Yeah, because then you're like, well, I've done everything I can and I've exhausted everything I can, and that's just the way it is. It's like a I don't know, for me, it's just, yeah. I've noticed it's a semi-coping mechanism.
It's definitely a coping mechanism. I think the challenge is, like, just building on that, is that you still got to get up the next day and do the same thing. Well, that's where it gets challenging, I think.
And that's where this book comes in. It's called the 80-20 rule, and because you know I'm trying to run a marathon.
I do. Yeah, not just a marathon, let's be honest. You're going longer than a marathon.
Yeah, I'm up a few hills, but it's pretty much that. And I started out like, oh, I know it, blah, 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 like, Patty, go with your gut. And I was speaking to lots of different people who are similar level but have read or done this. And then someone gave me the 80-20 book, which is, it says you've got to run 80% at like low intensity. So it's more how many Ks you get in the legs, not how you get them in the legs.
Yeah.
And it's that consistency thing. And there was this study done because there was these athletes pushing the boundary so far, but they were doing that circuit running for like even 1,500 metres, 800 metres.
Yep.
And the school of thought for a long time was there, run around as fast as you can and do it as quick as you can, like just literally pain. Like who can bear the most pain? But that had a threshold. And then someone came up intuitively, funnily enough, like just by testing, because he got shamed. He was a rugby player from New Zealand.
Yeah.
And he got shamed. He got put to the sword when he went for a run with someone. And he's like, that sucks. Why? Why? And then he just started running. And he developed this thought where it's more Ks you put in slowly, very consistently, leads to your ability to like build up lots of different thresholds within your body and lots of different, but then the study went on and on and on, and this whole book chronicles the evolution in a lot of sports that have actually gone through a similar phase.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and it's fascinating for me because I feel like, I don't know, performance sport or whatever, wherever I was when I was a younger person, I always thought just push yourself every time, but you actually don't get better.
No,
you get worse. There's studies, scientific studies that say you get worse, which is puts Messi's thoughts up on the wall.
Yeah,
again.
Well, you know, Lino, the king. Yeah. So let's all follow the Messi.
Yeah, let's walk more. But yeah, Ronaldo, I definitely think he's more of a push type of our personality.
Yeah, but he's a dickhead, so it doesn't really matter, does it? So if we're honest,
I'm definitely not a
no, but I guess it's, you know, it's your turn this week to be honest as well, and to give us the hot take to lead us into our chat.
Yeah, okay, so picking up off the back end of last week, we've had 2 weeks that have been running us around sort of AI running us in the back of platforming and different things. So platforming, we spoke about last week, and that was baby boomers had it sweet.
Yep.
But I'm going to come back and say baby boomers had it sweet, but we've also got our moment now if we're talking generational. And that is around sort of taking the moment that we have around AI and sort of this revolutionary change, whatever that is that's happening right now, is that access to knowledge is as close as it'll ever be to our fingertips if you can get into certain data lakes. And the power to reimagine what that is never been more, and probably arguably never been more in the hands of the young being native to it. So it's sort of saying, and then on top of that, it's like, what is our relationship to fear and how do we enable change? Like what is, and I wanted to take the conversation here, is like, what is change? How do you address that? And I think we should go from a personal level, like how we approach change, what does that look like? And then I know we've spoken back on potties a bit, but I want to revisit that change, fear, and how to cultivate optimism.
Yeah,
and what that actually is.
All right.
But yeah, it was picking up. So I reckon I made my minute there, but it was picking up on platforming.
Yep.
Baby boomers had it sweet, but arguably I think there's a moment now that is hitting a sweet spot. It's complicated. It's hard. It's like a societal leap of faith in a weird.
Yeah. For sure.
Space.
But it has to be a new game. That's the thing I would say, right? So it's kind of like, you know, it sounds, well, it is actually a Nike slogan, but it also sounds like a Nike commercial, which is, you know, like change the game. I feel like that is the thing that you often see, right? And just even to just build out quickly on your sport analogy, and then we will stop talking sport, is like that's often what happens in general. Yeah, let's go back to weather. Yeah, it's 31 and sunny here today in Melbourne, by the way, everyone, just in case you were wondering at home. The thing about it is, though, is that you actually see these generational moments happen, right? So, like, what we were talking about last week is that the deck is absolutely stacked if you're going to play the game the exact same way that it's been played. So like if you're thinking that, you know, basically the path to prosperity is to get a family home, quarter acre block, kind of, you know, get a career, kind of work in that career, work your way up the ladder, retire happy, caravan around Australia, and you know, leave something for the grandkids/kids. That game is done if you actually try to play it, because there's, you know, the 20 million people ahead of you, you know, who are going to play that game before you do. So I think that's where the thinking, like, and I often get a little bit discouraged around that. I don't see the thinking around how the game is truly going to change. Like I feel like we saw that through the internet era, but in the AI sense, I haven't really seen that yet. Like, how is this going to change, genuinely change something, right? And who are those faces? And maybe we're too early in it, but maybe that's kind of all to come. But that idea of like change the game is something that kind of, you know, Silicon Valley had that ethos, but I'm not sure AI has that ethos yet.
It definitely doesn't have that ethos yet, but no. I think it has, like, looking at it, assessing it, it's changing the game.
Yeah,
it's just whether, I think your point is, whether it's going to change the custodians who control the game is probably where we're at. And
exactly.
At the moment, it's not, because compute power, but as things come down and access in lowers just because of market mechanics, you can see that happening.
Yeah.
What does that look like? I don't think anyone knows. And if they do tell you they know, I'd probably walk the other direction.
Yeah, they're the snake oil salesman telling you XYZ. Like, there's definitely things that are kind of occurring. There's tools that you can use and kind of all that sort of stuff. But it's not game changing, right, in terms of where it's actually happening. But, I mean, your point there around that all of this takes compute power, takes access. And, you know, I'm not trying to pick on baby boomers, but it sounds like I am, is... The thing,
you're pretty close.
Yeah. Well, let's just call it that. I'm picking on you. Sorry. Sorry, entitled ones who've had everything given to them. I'm sorry that I'm picking on you. No, but in all seriousness, I'm picking on you. But what has happened is that, like, if you got to think, coming out of World War II, things genuinely changed, right? So, kind of, you know, that generation was absolutely set up by quite a few things in terms of that, the kind of, not dissimilar to today, right? So the suburbanization of the world, the kind of the rise of the car, the dual income family, kind of convenience culture, all of these things were kind of like really set the scene for the kind of the baby boomers to come to life. So the kind of the return to kind of the workforce after the war through the kind of 50s then drove this generation into the 60s and 70s who grew up in this and actually had space and freedom to kind of have youth, right? They actually had youth for the first time. And what I, you know, kind of lament sometimes is that, like, youth, I think, is really, really important and has been under threat for forever. Like, I feel like I actually had a youth. Like, I actually kind of, you know, went through that, whereas I kind of look at kids today, that's less so because of digital. But then where do the big ideas come from if they're so over-programmed, never have time to think things through? And that's where I hope some of these game-changing ideas start to come from, right? Which is some of the stuff, like, you talk about in your work, is about how education needs to change to adapt for this sort of stuff.
Well, that's what I'm sort of getting at, is if the game's changing, it's like education is changing, and there is that in the... It's maybe not at a federal level, but at community level, it's like, well, what are the skills that are needed? And you're starting to see really unique ways of doing that. And there's real opportunity because of the forecasts that are coming through, that we're going to change the way we work, blah, 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 blah. But what does that actually mean for a child? What does that actually mean for society? What does that mean for someone who's at the end of the funnel of work life? Like,
definitely.
Where are we now, and how do we prepare people to help solve some of the complex problems, or even excite them to do that, or even say that it is possible? But that's where I was going at the end of that intro, which I use selfishly as a setup, which is like, well, how do you create that change? Because I feel like we are a byproduct of the attention era is sort of sitting in the sofa of fear because it feels comfortable and because it's paralyzing. So how do you get out of those, like have a conversation of getting out of those headlights that make you a deer in headlights and make you just feel like, make you not even reactive, just, or maybe a little bit reactive, and how do you get proactive, and how do we actually start making those changes, I think is a is an interesting space to be, because that's where it has to start happening. And then interrogating that further, like how have we made changes in our lives? Like, what does that actually look like on a micro level? And then go out from there. But we've spoken about it a while back when we are at a Shank Anchors. Like, even just starting a business is a leap of faith. But I feel like at the moment we're all experiencing sort of what is the future and what does that mean for our business? What does it mean for life? But
Like, it feels like these kind of, like, these different things are all kind of colliding, but change, I guess, is kind of that there's probably two aspects to it, really, that depending on which way you want to kind of focus on it, we can go either which way. Because as your question, like, it's ultimately, like, I think there's a big thing in generational change that's actually occurring. And I agree with you. I think kids playing with technology at the moment, it's kind of like there's a conformity that comes with that that kind of I haven't really ever seen before, like in generations, like where's the rejection of the things that go before? So kind of like, will, you know, like TikTok and those types of things kind of get thrown out the window, or are they just simply just addictive at a kind of human level, like everyone used to smoke cigarettes, right? It's kind of like which was true of the baby boomer generation, their parents all smoked, right? So like, I think the smoking rate was like 85% and doctors used to prescribe it to it.
Consumption's down.
Yeah, but which was social media is the addiction.
Exactly, yeah. But they kicked the alcohol.
Yeah, definitely. Now. So which one's bad worse? But that's a rejection of what's gone ahead, right? So which is your point.
Yeah.
But I think it's bigger than that. It's kind of, it has to be a generational kick out of like thinking modes, right? And that's what I'm kind of going. I'm sure it's there. Like I'm sure it's happening in certain places. But what is that is actually gonna change things? Because you know people entering the workforce, there's never been less businesses started than last year, for example, right? Mm-hmm. So like 2023 was a dire state of entrepreneurship. So people are not starting businesses kind of to take advantage of something. But yet in this uncertainty that we're about to go through, maybe the business is the thing you just need to go, F you, I'm going to be sole operator, do this, do that. And that's the type of stuff that I'm kind of waiting to see, right? What is that? What's the template that kind of, you know, the kids in air quotes are actually doing?
Yeah, it's wait and see for sure. It's there, but it sort of has to happen if we're talking about not following in the path, because the dream of being an employee, retiring, working for a long time, that shift has been changing for a long time as people see, like, portfolio careers and all those terms around bringing up skills and taking that elsewhere.
Yeah,
that's sort of where we are, but then the landscape seems like it's about or is changing right now. And that is, where do you put your worth and what is worth, I suppose. And we spoke about that last time around shared value and what that actually looks like. That, but like individual value, what is that now?
What does that mean?
And what is just that thing. I feel like we're going back to that sofa of like that byproduct is how do we get out of that? Like how do we change our relationship to fear? And I think a lot of that comes through education.
Yep.
And it comes through that reform. But like Ed is changing. So that's exciting. But it's how it's delivered, is it?
For sure. And I think
experience
like,
is huge.
And to your point around kind of like actually acknowledging that fear is actually a thing, I think would be the first place to start in some of that. So kind of actually like not just building like kids' resilience to come back from kind of, but to understand fear and what fear is actually based in. And fear is a good thing. And kind of how do you actually kind of reconcile it, not overcome it, right? I think those are the types of things that hopefully start to come out and be more prevalent in the conversation around things.
Yeah, and anxiety is actually can be a healthy thing if understood well. And some of those things like can be a motivator, it can be if you understand the part it plays, if it doesn't play a dominating role in that.
Yeah.
But how do you confront, like to take it to a personal level, it's easy to like look it out, but I feel like how do you confront anxiety if you have it?
For sure. Well, I mean, I definitely have anxiety like in terms of I think like a lot of work to understand kind of where it comes from. And you know, I think like some of that is like, you know, working with a psychologist to understand what your imprint actually has been around kind of fear and that type of stuff. And you know, certainly like and understand triggers as well and kind of like what that ingrained behavior actually is. So kind of being able to unpack that and understand it in the moment. And then I think it's also the hardest part of it all is coming to grips with your own kind of capacity for fear and kind of what it's actually meant for you and how you are how you're brave, not necessarily how you're not brave. Mm. And what I mean by that is, like, name some athlete, Kyle Lenny, right? I'm not going to be able to send myself down a, 110-foot wave, at the front of some Nazir in Portugal. Like, yeah. That's just, like, I can barely make it down a 15-foot one, never mind anything else, right? Because that's my threshold, right, based on my experience. But I reckon if I put Kyle Lenny and had to make him operate, 2 foot. Here we go, cheers.
15 foot, that's massive.
No, but it's, yeah, I reckon it's manageable. Yeah. Yeah. I reckon, like, at a push, that's what I mean. Like, before you could just go, that's impossible. And that's what I'm trying to talk about. I'm not saying that I can do that. I'm trying to say that that is something I can imagine and wrap my head around and set something to be like, okay, if I really, really put my mind to it, I could do that. Mm-hmm. Right. But that's probably my fear threshold. Whereas if you put me in something that is like 30 foot high, I'd be like, right? I couldn't fathom it. So I think that's part of it, right? That's kind of understanding your relationship to it at an individual level based on your own experience. And, but also understanding that, everyone's brave in their own way, right? So just because someone does, like, someone's an extreme athlete or someone's, like, kind of, an extrovert, can stand in front of 800 people and talk, everyone is brave in their own way. And it's understanding that for yourself that I think is really, really important.
Yeah, and is really, really important. And then I think it's changing our relationship to failure and the fear of failure, because we learn so much through that. That's like, I feel like that's the revolutionary point, because we came from industrial rev and it's like, well, you can't fail because you've got to be part of an oiled machine. And now it's like, you've got to fail to learn.
You do.
But we just don't have that taught in. But yeah, relationship to anxiety is a strange one.
Yeah. And what about yourself? I mean, how do you relate to that? Like, how do you relate to your own anxiety? Do you have fear. It? Yeah. And fear.
Yeah, for sure. I have, I'm only human. Anxiety and nerves, I think they sort of light you are, but you have to look at them. Like, the best way I describe it when it's healthy is, when I was little, I would walk down a hallway, and if the lights were off behind me, I'd always knew it was an irrational fear, but feel like something was behind me.
Yep.
And want to run up the hallway. But whenever I stood still and walked slow, it was slowly starting to confront that and start to work through that. And whenever I'm healthy in life, that's what I do with whatever, like, whenever there's something makes me fearful or makes me anxious, if I can turn around, look at it and assess it, or slow it down, I start to work through it. And that's often when life gets a bit more clearer, versus letting fear or anxiety run me around like a ragged doll, just because it makes me feel like I'm doing something, but it's actually doing the opposite.
It's detrimental. It's interesting, isn't it, how your nervous system, kind of that there's cortisol versus kind of like your limbic system, and how you really want to be able to stay calm, right? So kind of calmness, like, I think that's that, like, what I see in schools is really lacking, is kind of like how they teach kids to stay calm under kind of scenarios, and kind of under, because the pressures arguably are only ever going to get worse as kind of life goes on. But education tends to be about knowledge acquisition, skills, tests, etc., rather than teaching these are moments in time, that was good, that was bad, however that is around people's own assessment. But we're not really set up for that type of discussion. Like, you rarely hear people talking about, like, oh, calmness is a good thing, right?
Yeah, and it's creeping in more, but it's not given the value, or the value metric where you can measure on a scale like we're used to measuring educational output, like KPIs around, you got a result on this, so therefore, I can sell the school this, or I can say that the school's succeeding here. But slowly there's frameworks developing where people can measure that and make it quantifiable, which is great, because the first teacher epidemic in Oz, and I know it's around the world, and then also, like, the mental health crisis is phenomenal.
Yeah. For sure.
It's wild.
There's
a story.
You go. Yeah.
There's a story around expectation, which I think is a fascinating one, with around creating change. And that comes from a story. It's called I'll put a show note, but it's a marathon that you're not allowed to say anything about. It's like a weird one to even get an invite to. Correct me if I'm wrong, if I've shared this on the potty before. No,
this story. You have not.
So this story is, this marathon started, and it's the equivalent of going up and down Mount Everest twice. And so this and it's a loop. You know, without any GPS, you have to write your own map, and you have to find books, and your number is associated with a number in that book, and you have to tear a page out and show that you've done the loop successfully.
Jeez, yeah.
And the organizer is a classic bloke, but he said there's only three loops when it first started, so everyone came together, and it's a really hard process to get in, and then when you get invited, it's exciting. And then when everyone came there, and everyone thought this race was near on impossible, and then he said, there's actually five loops. And everyone's like, oh my God, no one can do that. So they just all started racing three loops and thinking five's impossible, because that was sort of the setup, the context. Yeah. And the whole context of this race is to push your limits. Like the race, the guy who creates it, he's like, I create it so people can find their limits and have that opportunity in life to safely and unsafely sort of test themselves and find out who they are, which I find fascinating. Like, it doesn't have to be an exercise or what that actually is. Those opportunities are hard to come by. But what happened was no one was running the fifth loop, and then because everyone was just sort of expecting that you just can't. Crazy feat. And then this Englishman came over to the States, wasn't part of that whole culture, didn't quite know that that was the expectation, and just ran the five loops and nailed it. And he didn't know that was the, like, he didn't have those expectations. And yeah, I feel like that's something with generational problems that often happen, or how problems are often solved is sort of just through ignorance often, that you don't know that that's the thought,
the idea.
And that's, I find fascinating how that works.
Yeah.
And that's a great example of it.
No, it is. It is. And I think the piece of that that really kind of resonates with me is that there's, if a lot of what we're told in life is that things are, you know, however we're programmed, whatever it is, it's kind of what that's talking about is that they just put an obstacle, right? So three was the obstacle, that thou shalt not go past that. Whereas I think what has to happen in education is really kind of understanding that everyone has their own obstacle, and kind of like human potential is often unlocked when they see it's possible. And you see that in a lot of stuff with like digital mimicry, right? So a kid can see something now that is, like snowboarding used to be impossible to do like a 1080. Someone sees someone do it and they're like, I can actually do that because it's possible. They can watch it. They can understand it. They can understand how they've got the rotation right. All of those types of things that go with it. It is possible. But our education system doesn't actually really unpack that for a lot of people, right? And it's, I think that it's gotten a lot better. But I mean, when I was in school, like the biggest limit for me was actually my social anxiety more than it was about anything else. But that was never addressed. So therefore, the cap on my own learning was about how willing was I to actually, how safe did I feel, right? To actually kind of, be part of something, to kind of, show my true self, et cetera. And that's kind of the education system I feel like of today that is really important for kids, because we're going to enter into a world where computer will know everything, right? And kind of when we hit on sports weather, so we may as well hit on Star Trek today as well. Yeah. Is bingo,
holy trio.
You're supposed to yell bingo, I believe. That's what we agreed when those are But in the future, it's about the assessment of things and kind of the ability to understand where you're at an emotive level and be able to process that. That is kind of actually really going to be the key unlock, I think, for a lot of these things to kind of take human potential, not just in a sporting sense, but actually in a genuine sense for what we're actually capable of, is that that's probably the direction that education needs to go over the long term, because facts will be known. They'll be someone else's domain.
Exactly. And that's what's so exciting, but yeah, that's the challenge at hand, is how do you incorporate some of that into ed, and what does that lead into? But
but that might be, to come back to your first question, that might be the way that the next generational change comes through, is not necessarily through technology, but actually through intuition and becoming more grounded in oneself.
It's a good place.
There we go.
As always, Joey, it's nice to lay down some thoughts.
Yeah, no, that was good. Yeah, thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
All right, cheers, bud.